People, listen up. It's a fucking lockdown right now.
Come off it. We're not in a prison drama, are we?
We are in a prison drama. This is the fucking Shawshank Redemption, right? But with more tunneling through shit, no fucking redemption.
Screw you guys. I'm going home.
Sheriff, this is no time to panic. This is the perfect time to panic.
It's the end of the world.
I'm going. I'm going with Child.
Hey, fuck you, Parker!
I'm going with you!
Who says I want you going with me?
All right, cut the bullshit!
Because the whole world gone crazy!
Hey!
Everybody calm the fuck down.
This girl's an open page. Bookmarking, she's so close now. This girl is half his age.
Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of Holmes Movies Recommends. My name is Anders Holmes. I'm joined by my older brother, Adam, in the United States of America over Skype.
Guten Tag.
So, last episode, Adam recommended To Have and Have Not, directed by Howard Hawks and something, starring Humphrey Bogart and Lauren.
Something, dark side.
Something, complete. So, today I want to recommend a film that came out in...
You're just quickly trying to think of one, aren't you?
No,
It is a movie, it is shot with cameras, there were actors in it.
Yeah, it was a film where they the theme tune, write the theme tune, sing the theme tunes.
God, there's a lot of references already.
So, yeah, the movie I'm recommending is from 1973, and it was directed by Peter Bogdanovich, another sort of new Hollywood director, and that is the film Paper Moon, which I saw very recently, starring Ryan O'Neill and his daughter, Tatum O'Neill. And
interesting.
Have you seen this?
No.
So this was, I think, the third or fourth movie that Peter Bogdanovich had done. So he had already at this point when he was about to make the film, he had already had success with What's Up Doc, and he also had huge success with The Last Picture Show. So he was quite in demand, as well as a bunch of other directors who were kind of, you know, starting out at this point. So the script written by Alvin Sargent, and Alvin Sargent wrote a bunch of screenplays, and he sadly passed away last year, and he wrote Ordinary People, which I believe he won the Oscar for. Yes, he did. He won the Best Adapted Screenplay, which again is another great film directed by Robert Redford and stars Donald Sutherland. And yeah, he wrote like a bunch of different types of films, and he wrote like films like Paper Moon and also films like Ordinary People, but he also wrote some of the Spider-Man movies. And he was married to Laura Ziskin, who was a producer on those movies. And so the film was originally called Addie Prey, and the script landed on Peter Bogdanovich's desk, and Peter Bogdanovich wasn't, I think he liked it, but he wasn't really interested in doing that script at the time. And he was already writing a Western that he wanted to do with John Wayne and Henry Fonda in mind. So that was kind of what he was planning on doing.
Whoa, what's this?
It was some Western. He was like, I was watching a bit of the behind the scenes of it on the DVD, on the Blu-ray, and it was a film that he was thinking about doing, and he was writing it, and he got to like the end of like the first draft, and then John Wayne lost interest and then didn't do it. So that
I don't want to do it anymore.
I'm already up. So they didn't end up, doing that movie, but then
could you just imagine for a second what a 1973 Western starring like old wheezy fat John Wayne and Henry Fonda would have directed by Peter Bogdanovich would have looked like.
That would have been pretty interesting.
This has to go down as one of the great lost movies.
Yeah, the films that were like never made. I kind of would be interesting to hear if like Peter Bogdanovich like actually has like that script, because there was a bunch of like films that he was, he tried to do but never really got around to doing them. So he ended up doing Paper Moon, and then he read the script, and it wasn't a film he. I don't know. I think he wanted to do it because he wanted the job, or he felt like it'd be something to do. But I don't think he knew.
Well, a paycheck's always nice.
Yeah, a paycheck's always nice, and also just because he was in demand, and also just wanted to keep on working, I guess. But the film, even he didn't think it was going to be as big as it was. you know, when it came out, and even, you know, and it got Roger Ebert's, you know, 4-star approval. And it is a really, really pleasant film. It's set during the Great Depression. It's shot in black and white because Orson Welles, who was his mentor at the time, said he should shoot it in black and white. Really makes good.
Orson Welles was always telling him to shoot stuff in black and white. He said the same with The Last Picture Show.
Yeah, he was. I can't...
it's like Orson Welles was afraid of modernity.
Yeah, he was like he said like he, you know, shoot it in black and white through a red filter, and it adds like a higher contrast to the images. And it's really, really beautiful cinematography. Like the cinematography in Last Picture Show is great, and in this one it's really, really good as well. And Laszlo Kovacs was the cinematographer on this movie, and he was like, you know,
shot the Last Picture Show?
I think he did. Laszlo Kovacs, he did a bunch of movies in this period. Like he was also very like in demand cinematographer. These are the films he did: Easy Rider, Five Easy Pieces.
Films with the word easy in the title.
The King of Marvin Gardens. He also did that documentary directed by John Ford, which Peter Bogdanovich did. So he did a bunch of like these sort of films in the time, and he also did Shampoo, which was a Hal Ashby film. So he did a lot of stuff.
So who was the cinematographer on The Last Picture Show?
I'm just trying to find that out for you.
I don't expect you to know everything, but you know.
No, of course. I don't know. Like, it was Robert Surtees.
Oh, right. Okay.
Who did the cinematography on The Graduate and Ben Hur and The Sting?
Wow, what a list.
So, and he also he did uncredited work on The Two Mules for Sister Sarah.
Good film, that.
Yeah, Paper Moon was Tatum O'Neill's first movie. I believe she was 8 or between 8 and 10 years old when she did this film. And
what, so 9?
One of those ages. I can't.
Between 8 and 10.
And she was she won an Oscar for this movie. This movie was it got a few nominations, this movie, but she was the only one that took the Oscar away, and she was like 10 when she awarded. She was like the youngest.
Who did she beat for that role, for that Oscar?
I do not know. I'll check that out.
That's one of these things where I'm just like, really? You gave it to a child?
Yeah, but she is good in the film.
I'm sure, but like there's probably someone who was like been working their ass off for decades who was passed over for that.
Yeah, she was up against Madeline Kahn, who's also in this movie, plays Trixie. Sylvia Sidney, Summer Wishes, Winter Dreams, Candy Clark, American Graffiti, and Linda Blair for The Exorcist.
Fucking hell, they didn't give it to Linda Blair.
Yeah. Well, there was that whole controversy because a lot of the vocal performance was from the not Joan Crawford, but the other actress.
Good. Who
was it?
Mercedes McCambridge.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah.
She did all the stick it up your ass, you fucking cocksucker, all those lines.
Yeah, I do. That's a really good impression. Yeah, that's a good point actually, because that is basically half the performance is that vocal.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, so it wasn't necessarily a vintage year for
not exactly. Best. No, they had a.
Was it best supporting actress or best actress?
Well, that's the thing. She got best supporting actress, but she's the lead in the movie.
That's so stupid. I hate it when they do that. Yeah, the Oscars are stupid.
They did it for Hayley Steinfeld in True Grit. She was the lead actress.
The main character. She's literally the main character.
Yeah, like the whole film basically revolves around her. The first shot of the movie is her at her like.
She is the protagonist. She is the main character of the film.
She's the main protagonist, and it, like I said, it's set in the Great Depression. It starts off at her mother's funeral, out in the middle of nowhere, and as sort of during the funeral, this car's like in the background, and Ryan O'Neill shows up and he steals flowers from another grave, and he says like, do you know the deceased? Sort of, yeah. And then, well, you have the same jawline as Addie. Are you her father? No. And so there's this little, he may or may not be her father, and then he's sort of tasked with driving her, or just taking care of her and dropping her off at her aunt's house in Missouri, and she finds out that he's a con artist. So the way that he makes money is he goes up to people's houses and he keeps an eye on the obituaries, and then he shows up at people's houses and like, hello, I'm here to see Mr. So-and-so. And then the wife is like, oh, Mr. So-and-so has recently passed on last week. Oh, darn. And all this sort of stuff. And he says like, well, he ordered this Bible and he printed your name on it. Is your name Marie? And there's a great scene where Tatum O'Neill is sitting in the car, and it's really nicely edited. And you can hear Ryan O'Neill in the background standing in this house, and she sees all this stuff, like this print stuff that he like printed the name in the car, and she sees this newspaper with the circle of the person that passed away. And it's sort of like they're pretty much on edge with each other at first, kind of maybe sort of mirrors the relationship that Tatum O'Neill and Ryan O'Neill had in real life. But
yeah, I was going to say.
But along the way, they sort of form this, you know, con artist partnership, and they get into sort of like misadventures along the way. And it's a very nice father-daughter movie. And it's, you know, even though like he's sort of, even though Ryan O'Neill, who plays Moses Prey, he's just, you know, a little bit, you know, reluctant to sort of drive this girl around. He sort of becomes very sort of enamored by her, and, becomes a father figure for her. And she becomes enamored by him and wants him as like, you know, need that sort of, you know, that father figure in her life that is now lost. And, you know, she basically has no one, and they sort of rely on each other. And it's a really nice, moving film. There's like, it's not as bleak as The Last Picture Show. It's a little bit more upbeat. There's a lot more like comedic aspects to it and things like that. And it's a really, really nice film, and their performances are really good. And there's a really lot of nice long takes. There's like one particular take in a car, and they did like 38 takes because on this long stretch of road in the middle of nowhere, and they had to shoot it as fast as they could, because as soon as like while they were filming, they had to like drive all the way back down again and then start in this stretch of road, because it was the only place that kind of looked like the 1930s. You know, if they, you know, went further and further and further down this road, they would get to a more modern city that would look like 1970s, you know, Midwest America.
Right.
And yeah, it's just, it's a really like, it's a sweet film. It's a really nice, if you like road movies, like I really like road films, and it's just, and you know, great character conflict and banter between the two leads. And the detail that goes into like the production design is really good. Like it really feels like an authentic 1930s movie. And I feel like Peter Bogdanovich is a director who very much, he likes to live in the past, I would say.
Yeah, you can say that again.
And I think he very much emulates a lot of those filmmakers, you know, of the past. And I think he very much, like a lot of his films have these, like there's one film that he did in the 90s with Michael Caine, which feels like this very slapsticky 1930s type film. And I think a lot, and he did, and he had that very much old school style to his films that maybe people didn't warm as much up to. Like I think Paper Moon was like the last real successful film that he did, and then afterwards, like a lot of these directors who made movies in this time, the success didn't really last. Like they had a really quick moment of like high success, and then afterwards it you know, it ebbed and flowed a little bit. Like all those directors, you know, kind of had that period of like slumps.
Well, I mean, he does seem, I mean, he's not really that well known for anything other than The Last Picture Show these days. Obviously I think the thing he'd be most known for after that would be his sort of recurring cameo in The Sopranos. But like he's kind of faded from view. But yeah, when he first was around, I mean, he was basically friends with Orson Welles and, you know, knew John Ford and made these documentaries. I mean, he was almost like a little bit like one of those French, is it Godard or Truffaut, one of them who was a critic and then became a filmmaker.
Oh yeah, Truffaut was the guy who was like, one guy was like, I don't like your review of my movie, why don't you, if you think you know so much about movies, why don't you go make your own movie? And then that ended up being The 400 Blows and just blew up.
Yeah, well, don't provoke people into making great films. Yeah. So okay. Well, this sounds interesting.
Yeah, it's a really nice film. I think Tatum O'Neill, she carries this whole movie, and her performance is really good. And I don't really know too much about her story, but it's really tragic. Like, all the stuff you hear about the way Ryan O'Neill was a father towards her, it's quite tragic.
Well, yeah, wasn't. I mean, I have no idea still how Ryan O'Neill became such a big star, because he is one of the most boring actors.
He is just a pretty boy, but he doesn't, he just relies too much. Even in Barry Lyndon, he's good, but there's better things around him. Like, I mean, of course, the cinematography, but also just everything around him is pretty good. But
literally everything else about that film is completely perfect. And for some reason, his slight sort of gormlessness helps. That there is the sense of him just being a sort of opportunist. I don't know. It doesn't bother me as much in Barry Lyndon that he's so wooden, because the rest of the film just injects so much. There's just so much energy and vitality in the rest of the production. But I just have no idea how he became a movie star. He just cannot act. He's like, what's his name? Deadpool.
Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds. I know. I don't get blandest possible actor. Like, I cannot see. There's no feature on them. You know, there's nothing to get your teeth into.
Yeah, I think Paper Moon is the only film where I've been like, Ryan O'Neill, you can act. Anything else is a little bit, yeah.
Well, for that alone, that makes me curious to watch it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really nice little funny moments in this movie. It's a good time. Really good, heartwarming time.
Cool.
So that's my recommendation of the day. Paper Moon, directed by Peter Bogdanovich. Do check in with us next time to hear what Adam is going to be recommending.
Sweet.